Welcome to the Savvy Painter Podcast, the podcast for artists who mean business. Here's your host, Antrese Wood.
Hello, it's Antrese, and welcome to another episode of the Savvy Painter Podcast. You are in for a treat. Felicia Forte is my guest today. Felicia is a representational artist who paints a la prima portraits from her studio in Detroit. Her self-portrait Melting Point was accepted into the BP Portrait Award Show in 2015. After 15 years of waitressing, Felicia took a leap and decided to focus exclusively on her painting. It's an inspiring story of faith in her abilities and pushing past the "Oh my God, what did I just do?" moments to become the artist that she is today. Felicia and I talk about the importance of human connection for artists, how connecting with artists in the real world as well as a virtual world creates a safety net and community. And I have to say, I especially appreciated Felicia's candor in talking about a difficult period in her life and how the apathy that she felt turned out to be the thing that allowed her to grow as an artist. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you did too. So without further ado, here is Felicia Forte. Hi, Felicia. Thank you so much for being on The Savvy Painter, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Hi, my pleasure.
Can you tell me a little bit about when you first started considering art as your vocation, when you really started to say, like, I'm going to do this?
Well, I think it was at 30. So I started painting at like 15, but at 30, I was waiting tables for 15 years and painting on the side, and I just couldn't do that anymore. So I found that I was just having too many cocktails at the end of the night to forget about 15 years of waiting tables, and I was like, I kind of need to figure out if I can do this thing. I never really thought I could, but I also follow kind of intuition sometimes, so I'm like, had these good feelings about a couple of things that were coming up, and I thought, well, I'm just going to make a jump for it and see if it works out. If not, maybe figure something else out. But I can't wait tables anymore. So I was living in a little mountain community, Kings Mountain, in like below San Francisco on the peninsula, and they have an art fair. And so I decided to just kind of put all my energy into that and made this booth in the Redwoods and ended up selling a good amount of paintings and kind of launched it there, but was really surprised. I mean, I made a little brochure for classes, with like a little map and boxes to check and like a dotted line to cut out your information and send it in the mail if you wanted to take classes.
Wow.
So, yeah, that kind of started it, but it was terrifying.
I'm sure. Yeah. Just putting yourself out there like that and saying like, okay, this is the thing with art, I think, is that unlike any other profession, it's so personal and it's so much a part of you that it's scary to put it out there because I think the fear of rejection is so strong.
Yeah. I mean, you won't get rejected if you don't put yourself out there. So you can just live in this kind of safe, invisible bubble where you think what you're doing is okay and you don't have to get proved or disproved.
So, right.
I guess I'm pretty cautious in general about doing that real slow paced without taking the chances. And then when they're calculated, I'll take a big one. But yeah, so it's taken me a long time to make any of those steps, I think.
You're kind of the dip your toe in the water first and check it out and like look at the pool from all different angles.
Yeah. And then maybe once in a while do something kamikaze that doesn't make sense at all. But yeah.
I can totally understand that. I think I like because from the outside, if you're not like aware of the day to day stuff that happens, I think it can look like you do the kamikaze stuff all the time. Like I think if you like had a bullet point outline of my life, you might think, oh my God, this girl's crazy. But they were all very, very calculated, and I'll sit there and I watch for a long time before I like decide to jump in.
Definitely.
So it sounds like just the pain of not doing it
finally exceeded the pain or the fear of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just sitting there looking at the possibility of my life being, I'm starting to, I don't know, just be this stale person who doesn't like their daily life. And
yeah, isn't living the life that you know you want.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not that you knew what that was when you thought you wanted it. Like, it's always different than you expect it to be, better and slower and more winding, interesting. I think if we knew how long the road was to be an artist, we'd never stop. So that ignorance is a blessing.
Yeah.
Definitely.
With so many things. Yeah. With art and yeah, this podcast even. I think if I knew like what was going to happen, like some of it, I would say like if I knew how much work it was going to be, I probably wouldn't have done it. But then I also had no idea what the rewards were going to be. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's totally awesome. So do you remember when you made that decision, what were you expecting and then what actually happened?
Well, I think there were probably three categories. Like there was what I was hoping, what I was expecting, and what actually happened. I was kind of expecting to fail, probably, hoping that I would at least make back what I put into building the booth and advertising and framing paintings and all that. What happened was I sold like 6 paintings for $10,000, which was kind of...
Wow.
Like the prices, I didn't get those prices again for many years. I think it was just the roads of clients and place in the world and just meeting and being helpful. So, and I got 9 students out of it. So it was just really lucky and ended up, you know, being enough to quit my job. I'd already put notice into my job. That's how much I was trying to have faith in the effort. But
right.
Also, I just knew I didn't want to do it anymore. So I was like, okay, well, if this doesn't work, I still have to figure something else out. Maybe I'll.
Right.
Who knows? But
how did that feel? Like, because I used to wait table. And all through college, I waited table. So I know that industry really well. But how did it feel for you when you... So you didn't expect this thing to work. You put your notice in. And as a waitress, when all of a sudden in one weekend or 1 week or however long that was, you have $10,000. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I thought I was rich.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as a waitress, I would have been like, oh my God.
I was really worried about, I felt like waitressing was this really secure job. I remember thinking like, I'm being ridiculous by trying to be an artist when I have this secure job, you know, which it really is in terms of secure jobs, not very.
Right.
But it ended up being more secure, having more control over things and slowly building something up. So that was surprising.
Why do you think that?
I mean, I have more time and flexibility to direct my career, to decide things. I have that freedom. So it's secure in the fact that I'm happier. You know, I won't have to make any desperate decisions. I mean, honestly, even being a struggling artist, I made more money than waitressing. So that surprised me. I mean, I make a lot of the money from teaching. So that is secure. There's always people want to learn, and I really enjoy doing it. And I learn probably more than they do from teaching them. My skill increased tenfold after I started teaching, which was really lucky for me. Having to be responsible and explain it. So also, I think being an artist, you can have a diverse system of incomes. You know, you can sell work, you can teach, you can, what else can you do? Take an illustration job if you need it. You can make a video and sell it and have passive income coming in. I haven't done that yet, but it's on the list. I've just started doing online lessons. And that's been working out really well for people who live places where they're not near a class that they want to take.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, just more opportunity and options, I think.
Yeah. Very cool. I think that the ability to, I don't want to sound like a control freak, but I think the more control you have, the better. I think with everything, you know, kind of like what you're saying, like you can, somebody else isn't coming to you and saying, here's what you're going to do. You're able to look at and direct your own life and create it the way you want it to be and the most helpful to you. And you can test things out and start and stop. And I think that that, you know, like even in terms of giving classes, you know, kind of across the board, even how you manage your website and things like that, that's mm-hmm. all, you know, when you have full control over it and you're not dependent on another business or entity to provide things for you, you can, you know, I think you do ultimately in the long run way, way, way better.
Right. I can say for sure that for the first 2 or 3 years after I started doing art full time, I would wake up in the morning, kind of sit up. Can I cuss on this thing? I would sit up like a shot and just say, fuck, because I felt like I forgot something, you know.
Is that from waitressing? I used to wake up years after I quit waitressing. I would wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, my God, I forgot to drop off ranch dressing table 3.
Side of butter. No, but this was different. It was like this intense anxiety that was really the taking on of all the responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, just like, there's no one looking out for me but me here. Did I remember everything? Have I done everything I could have done? You know, because for the first few years, you're just casting lines, doing whatever you think you can do. There's no like step-by-step plan for how to make an art career. So you're kind of looking to see what everyone else is doing and coming up with ideas and just trying everything. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I can go to sleep tonight because I think I've done everything that I could have possibly done in my power today. But then I would still wake up in the morning and go,
shit!
Control.
It comes with a lot of responsibility.
It does, yeah. And I think there was an acceptance of a bigger lack of control. That was a big part of it. Maybe, you know, when I was younger waiting tables, I thought eventually I'll do something more secure and I'll get a 401k and I will have a retirement, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I'll buy a house. I'll have 3 kids. That will all come. But making the turn into a full-time art career means that, well, none of that is for sure in the future on this path. So letting go of it all and just kind of being in the moment more is a big lesson to learn, I think.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, because I think so many people, I had all these fantasies of what my life was going to be like, and they're all sort of based on, I don't know what, like what you see other people doing, TV shows, cartoons, you know, whatever it is that you're watching and looking at. And kind of society, like what the expectations are for what your life is going to be like. And, letting go of all of that is such a relief. It's hard because it feels like an anchor, but once, you know, I feel like once I let go of all that and just said, no, my life is going to be what it's going to be. And I don't have to do everything on an imaginary schedule or an imaginary, path that, I think other people think I should do, you know?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I'm to the point where now in my daily life, where I am now, I'm like, even letting go of ideas of what time you should sleep and wake up, when you should work. Like, I'm in this weird free flow zone of I'm painting till 6 in the morning sometimes and then sleeping till 2. Well, that's fine. I don't have anything to do except make work and contact students. So whenever I want to do it, I should do it as long as I'm doing it. And it took me a few months here to be like, well, that's okay. I don't know, just getting rid of all the ideas of when, how you should do things.
Do you have a certain rhythm that you feel works best for you? Like, you know, or does it switch? Because I've gone through a lot. Like I remember more than a couple years ago, but it was right after I quit my job at Disney, and I would just paint constantly, and I could be up until I think it was around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. I would stay up all night, and I had these certain markers, like my the next door neighbor on the left, their father left for work at, I think, 4:30 in the morning. And so I'd be like, you know, because I had no clocks or anything. I didn't want any clocks in my studio. So I would hear him start his engine, go, 4:30. And then the other neighbor directly across the street, the sun would come up and he would leave at about 7. I'd be like, oh, wow, really getting late now. And then, you know, the other neighbor would leave around 8:30 and be like, I should think about going to bed now.
Yeah, these days I don't have any rhythm. I realize that my rhythm and organization is defined by my responsibilities. So when I had morning classes or evening classes, I'm big on responsibility and being there and doing what I'm saying I'm going to do. So that informed my schedule. And now that, we just moved to Michigan in September. So there was a good 6 months of kind of adjusting and downtime and painting here and there, but kind of just being.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm starting to add more responsibility in with these online lessons and stuff like that. So I'll have more things scheduled. But yeah, lately, no schedule. Yeah.
Why did you decide to move to Michigan?
Well, Matt had lived in San Francisco for 15 years. He's from Michigan originally. And I'd been there about 9. And we just wanted a change. And it's just appealing to come to a place where you can get more space for less money.
Yeah.
Time. You know, more money, more time, more freedom. I can paint more, run around less. And we just have a beautiful place with a studio in the attic. And it's a fraction of the cost of San Francisco.
San Francisco's
beautiful, but what I want right now is not to, you know, eat at fancy restaurants. It's to kind of be calm and work and just a different pace.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like it here. It's an interesting city. Oh, we're in Detroit.
You're in Detroit. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. So, financially, I mean, just in terms of property values or whatever, but San Francisco is just out of control, and Detroit is the opposite of that almost, you know?
Yeah. I think for a third of my rent for a studio apartment in San Francisco, we have a 2-bedroom apartment with basically another apartment on top that is a full apartment that is the art studio and a backyard and a basement, and it's just
refreshing.
Nice not to be like feel like you're a forever teenager living in a city where you can't afford enough space to feel sane. So
yeah, huge change. That's big. Well, I think it, you know, it'll be interesting to see what you know, kind of long term, what happens after this move for you, because I'm just thinking like of so many artists that I've talked to who are kind of later on in their careers, and they're saying that, yeah, there was just a certain point where I made a very conscious decision to cut back on how much I was spending for things, you know, kind of exactly what you guys just did. Mm-hmm. and how much that affected their painting in a very, very positive way, because this huge load was kind of taken off. It wasn't so stressful, and they had the space to create, impacted their both their actual painting and their careers in a very, very positive way. So,
yeah, I think the big currency gained is time, because there's opportunity to make money in a city like San Francisco or New York. But it costs so much to live there that you're busy all the time making the money to afford to live there. It's not, you know,
yeah.
I feel like there's less opportunity here, and that's the trade-off. But you need less. So what you really gain is time, which is
the most valuable.
So nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the most valuable.
Yeah. And then, and also, I mean, like you know, you're kind of hinting at, there's other opportunities, especially now. Like, I think that if you, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, moved to a very isolated place, you might have a much more difficult time. But now it's, you don't really lose that much except for the face to face. I mean, there's so many ways to compensate for that.
Definitely. And I'm surprised at how many students I've already found here. I thought I would be on a desert island somehow. I don't know, just ignorant on my part, I guess. But yeah, I've already had people come over for lessons, and there's workshops, and it's kind of a lively group nearby. So
very cool.
Pleasant surprise.
So how did you, when you moved to Detroit, how did you kind of set yourself up and find these students? Like, what, you know, I have a lot of people ask me those questions a lot. They're like, okay, I just, either I'm in this small town or a new place, but basically the question is, I'm kind of new here. How do you set yourself up?
Well, I have to say, I think they found me because, I mean, I've been concentrating for 6.5 years on teaching and mm-hmm. building that name for myself, starting from that brochure at the art fair in 2010, and then Craigslist ads for students, and then starting to teach with Sadie Villari at her school, and then teaching alone, and then starting to have people invite me to teach workshops elsewhere. First few of those didn't fill because my name wasn't good enough. Sometimes they still don't, but it's just been a slow build. So I think at this point, with the help of like Facebook and Instagram and just having taught hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students, people probably see me online and then go, where is she? And then go, oh my God, she's near me. And then come and take a lesson.
Yeah. Very cool. From where you are now, kind of looking at, you know, what you've done since 2010, what do you think, aside from deciding to do that, you know, that first kind of big leap, what was there a decision that you made that you feel like, looking back now, was a really good one? That had was sort of a pivotal moment for you?
I'd say, I mean, career-wise, right? So going to conferences is always helpful. You just end up hanging out with people and making friends. And with this world, I feel like for a couple generations now, no one's told their kids they can't be artists anymore. So the world is just lousy with us. And with so many... it's hard to, I don't know, distinguish yourself, but everything's run by a human being. So if you go to places where you meet them and you get along, then you actually just make human connections. Online is good, but meeting people in real life is something I think you should do equally. So
yeah,
anything like that that I've done, I feel has been really good. Good for me, humanizing everyone else instead of just like, you know, because you watch someone online and you have an idea of what their life or career is like, and you talk to people and you feel like connected and they share your experiences, and I don't know. So
yeah it's
human connection is good.
What, really?
Well, it's hard because, you know, I'm kind of reclusive in my studio. Matt says, I'm just looking out the window like a cat at the birds in the backyard. And he went, are you going out today, Felicia? No, I'm looking out. So it is, I think for artists, it's not always easy to go out and be social.
No, it's not. I think that is so common. And I have a personal goal that my husband teases me, and my neighbors, when I used to live at that house that I was talking about earlier, would tease me too, because they'd be like, your car hasn't moved in like 5 days. Are you, you know, they would like literally come over and like knock on the door and be like, are you okay in there? And my husband always teases me. He's like, are you going to leave the house? And so now I kind of make sure every day that like, I'm not just stuck, I don't feel stuck in my, you know, like, I don't mind it. That's the thing that's so funny, is I don't feel stuck. I don't feel like imprisoned in my studio. It's just where I want to be. But I know that you know, like, human contact is so important. And getting outside and, you know, like sunlight is good also, which is why for me, at least plein air painting kind of takes that, gets me out.
I'd say like my friendship with Sadie Valeri was really formative for me, to have someone nearby to talk to about the challenges of starting a school or classes, that kind of a thing. Like, also when I went to, one of my first conferences, I watched all these classes, right? These little master 3-hour workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had just started teaching. So I was like, I was really afraid at that point. I'm like, I'm taking money from these people. What if I'm not a good teacher? And, then I watched all of these professionals, right? And I thought, I am a good teacher. They're explaining things similar to the way I'm explaining things. It's basic fundamentals of painting. I get them. And they also forget to finish answering a question when a crowd of people are asking the questions at once. And
right.
They're human, so.
They're nervous on stage in front of, like, hundreds of students, too. So, like, wow, we're not that different.
Yeah, it's nice to have something, you know, just to compare yourself to when you're starting out and when you've spent years alone painting and no one's seen any of it, you know?
Yeah. What are some of the conferences that you really enjoy going to? Like, do you have some that you just won't miss?
No, I've kind of enjoyed all of them that I've gone to, but it's more for meeting and talking to other artists, like I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what you're interested in, you know? I mean, if I was going to give advice to other people about what they should go to, if they're into plein air, they should go to the plein air conference. And if they're into portraiture, for me, I'm not sure that where I'm going with my art, not that I know exactly where that is, but fits into any of the ones that I've been to so far completely. I feel like I'm kind of diverging from that path. So every year I ask myself, should I enter into this competition? Is this trying to fit into this, you know, part of the world good or bad for me? So I don't know. Yeah, I like going and talking to people. I have lots of friends that go. But yeah, I don't know. I think that you should pay attention to the sections of the art world where you feel kindred.
So. Right, right. So we're talking about conferences and then also a little bit about competitions.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide what competitions to enter? Like, what do you look, what are the things that you sort of make you feel like that aligns with where I'm going?
Well, I've probably been entering competitions since before I should have been, because I was just throwing money in the trash. it was probably healthy in the way that it made me try for something and improve a little bit each time. But I felt, I think that knowing who's judging a competition is important. Knowing, studying who's won the last 5 years, just to know if your work would be relevant to what that competition holds up as important.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people don't always do that. I certainly didn't when I started. I had no idea. I was super naive about just how the art world worked in general. Yeah, you want to enter things where you have a chance of getting exposure and hopefully money, but art contests don't really hand out very much money.
Right.
So I know a lot of people that have had luck with like magazine cover competitions and stuff like that. I haven't. I mean, I think the only thing I won, and I didn't win it, but got into, was the BP Portrait Award.
Mm-hmm.
That was last year. And I think it's luck, really. With so many entries, it just happens to be if someone judging felt something about the thing you entered.
So when you decided to enter into the BP Portrait Award, or the Portrait, what is it called? The Portrait, it's not, is it actually called the Portrait Awards?
BP Portrait Award.
Award. Okay, so it sounds funny because when I say, like, when you decided to enter the BP Portrait Award, it sounds like you already won it.
Yeah. I did not win it, just out there.
Did so you?
That's not confused.
Noted. So did you look at the jurors and apply that whole thing, or did you decide that you wanted to go for it?
So I'd entered maybe 4 years in a row before that.
Okay.
And that includes shipping giant paintings in wood cases or whatever, you know.
Yeah, all the way over to...
All the way to London to have them refuse and to have to pay for them to ship back. Some of them I gave to my friends because I couldn't afford to have them sent back.
Oh, my gosh.
If you paint tiny, enter this contest. It will not cost you that much. I don't. And basically, I had it on my calendar as like, this is the last day you can enter. And my Google calendar like gave me a notification and I was like, I'm not going to do it. It's 2 weeks away and I never get in. And I always just have this conflict with painting for competitions because if you win, it's great exposure. But if you don't, you may have wasted a month trying to paint for something instead of exploring an interesting idea on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows where that could have led, to a new body of work or to learning a lesson that wasn't based on trying to get approval. So I have conflicts with entering contests and what it does to me in general.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the Google reminder came up and I just thought, okay, one last time. And the reason I did it was because it was the first year that they allowed online entry for the first round, which means I didn't have to ship anything until I got in to the first round of judging, which gave
Huge.
Me a better chance.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, the risk is less this year, one last time. And I read all of their instructions again because I feel like with these big competitions, they're looking for reasons to disqualify entries. They have so many to go through. So if you don't follow the directions, you know, they're just going to be like, nope. So I ended up reading all through it again. And I hadn't realized that you could do a self-portrait. I don't know why. It just wasn't in my mind. And I thought, okay, well, I've got this panel. I've got 2 weeks. I'm just going to set a lamp over my head and a mirror in front of me and try to do a self-portrait. So I just painted it quickly and tried to enter it. It worked out randomly, right? Because I was like, I mean, I even know there's a drawing mistake in that painting. I couldn't keep my head still. One of my eyes is slightly too far away from my nose. I didn't have time to fix it. And I promised I would just enter one last time. So I just entered it. And who knows, maybe that's what they liked. Some weirdness in it. And, you know, it doesn't really matter why they liked it, I guess.
But they got it, yeah. But they liked it. Very cool. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
I've seen that portrait. It's a beautiful portrait. I think, you know, like, I don't know. That's the thing about art is that it doesn't have to be perfect, you know, that sometimes that's what makes it more interesting. And also, like, yeah, we are our worst critics. Like, I think, my God, like, I beat myself so much over, you know, like things and paintings that nobody else will likely notice, but that's what pushes us and that's what keeps
right, yeah.
us going.
We need to be our worst critics,
so. Yeah.
I think to be good. Students ask me sometimes, well, I noticed there's a drawing mistake, but should I fix it? I'm like, if not you, who? So, yeah.
Yeah. There's a time and a place for it, I think. Can you talk about, was there somewhere where you encountered a big setback or experienced something that felt like a failure? But more importantly, what I want to talk about or what I want to hear is what you took away from that experience.
The only thing that comes to my mind is kind of an emotional setback that made me view things differently, I guess. I got a divorce and I became pretty apathetic. Like, painting seemed really unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
I had to keep doing it because I was teaching, needed to support myself. But there was just a point where I was just like, this is not an important thing to be doing in the world, painting pictures. And I think, like, during that time, I started liking, like, Louis C.K., when before I was like, this is depressing.
Uh-huh.
And now I think it's funny that I thought it was dark because I find it really true and interesting. But, like, that kind of appreciation, like, hitting an emotional low and then being able to see a broader spectrum of colors, you know, or more notes
right
out there.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I thought, am I going to keep doing this? Or should I change directions? And I think what really happened was that that apathy loosened me up in my painting. So I kept painting because what else am I going to do? Wait tables? So, and there's a painting that I originally called Apathy, but was too on the nose, so I changed it. It's called a Dismantling, Something You've Worked So Hard to Create. And there was a point in that painting where I had to decide, like, am I going to prove my skill and paint all these casts and the skeleton realistically, which I can do with some pain because I don't like it. Or am I going to just say, fuck it, and kind of express how I'm feeling and how I want to show this image. And there's a couple like passages of brushstrokes that are like these big swirly things, which is just me being angry. Mm-hmm. And then I liked them, you know, and I was like, ah, interesting. Like, I just needed to get to this rock bottom of not proving something about myself, feeling like that didn't matter anymore, to learn how I wanted to paint, or more how I wanted to paint, because I'm still learning that every day and fighting like the ideas of how you should, if you should, or how you should do something and how you naturally would do something. So
that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really big. Like that, it is a hard thing. It sounds like it was a really hard thing to go through, you know, to get to that rock bottom place and to, just be there. But that's the thing that, you know, I think about art that, you know, when you allow it to, when you allow yourself to feel that and you allow it to go into your work, then, you know, like you say, like those angry brushstrokes end up being something really interesting. Not that you have to, you know, I don't like the idea that artists have to be like in this dark, depressing, suffering mode. I don't think that at all. I just think they have to be honest.
Sorry to interrupt. I don't want to give people the wrong idea that it's like this, you know, like any movie that has an artist in it has this kind of idea of this kind of like wine drinking expressive paint splatterer.
Right.
Speaks the truth brashly or something. I'm not trying to describe that kind of a situation. Just a letting go, you know.
And exactly.
Accepting yourself, whatever that means, whether it means you're going to paint slightly different things in the same manner or change your manner of painting. Or yeah, exactly. Not, you know.
Yeah, you're not, you're just letting yourself be yourself and the letting go of pretending to be or trying. It's so hard to say because it's not like, you know, before that you're, you know, I don't want it to sound like before that your paintings were inauthentic or false or, you know, like fake in some way. But they're like, people talk about finding your voice or, you know, like finding what makes you you or whatever that thing is. And I think that thing is really just letting go of all the bullshit that we put up and all the, you know, all the walls that we build in a way of not wanting to be accepted. Mm-hmm. and withholding things because we want to be accepted.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I would say my painting wasn't fake, but I just didn't know myself that well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're always changing, so I may decide I don't know myself again in 5 years. But, yeah, I think that maybe like in Alla Prima portraiture, which I've just done about a zillion of from teaching, that freedom and knowing yourself or knowing myself was easier because it's for practice, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's not for approval and it's this moment to just learn something. So I would find something more true in those. And then when sitting down to be like, okay, I can't just be a painter who has a bunch of floating heads everywhere. I need to paint important works. And then I'd go, what is an important work? You know, I think that's when, like, that's when I needed to get to that low point to be like, I know what an important work is. It's something about me that's vulnerable, and that's how I want to express things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm leaning now. Like, I think work that I like shows some vulnerability in the point of view of the artist.
Yes. Yeah.
Just some truth, something human that you can relate to.
Yeah, and it's
personally.
Yeah, exactly. And what's so funny or frustrating about it is that, I mean, I'll just speak for myself. To me, that's really scary to do, like to be vulnerable, to put yourself out there to this public or this, you know, like this, I don't know, like, yeah, to the public, which is such an anonymous word.
Right. And I think probably no one cares, but it's still hard.
Yeah, well, I think, okay, so yeah, some people don't care, but then some people see it and respond like with incredible, you know, enthusiasm and emotion, and the way that you want to move people with your work, or the response that you kind of get, because it sort of in some ways reflects what you're feeling when you make it. So when you're feeling this thing and you make something and then you put it out there and all you hear is crickets, like that's the worst fear is like,
I see. Yeah. I guess I didn't mean no one cares in the good way of caring. I meant, I think you're afraid of
things that won't happen,
judged, right, for being vulnerable. I think that you're right. If so, the people that will say something are the people who felt something from it, and not everyone will. And those people, you know, quote unquote, won't care. So no one's going to be like, you've told us to TMI, well, funny, Felicia.
Right.
But I had a few paintings at a show in Denver last year, and one woman came up and talked to me about her experiences that were similar. And it was like, really emotional. She was emotional. And it was really good because, you know, she'd ask me questions about it. And then I, you know, with a glass of wine, will tell you too much about my experience behind that painting. But it was a good, it was a really good talk. And I was like, wow, someone felt something from this painting. That is more than you hope for, really.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also, too, like I'm kind of connecting some dots, but you said earlier about the conventions that what you like about them is, you know, like being around other people and the humanity of it, you know, just like the difference between online friendships versus really getting to know people. And I think that, you know, once you start showing some vulnerability in your painting, or once you start, you know, letting go, I think it's letting go is such a better term for it. Doing that combined with putting faces, you know, when you just say putting it out there, it feels like you're going to have this, artists, we have such great imaginations, and it works against us when we start imagining all the horrible things that are going to happen. But when you get yourself out there, like what you're saying, and you are able to have human faces to your collectors, your audience, the people that are interested in your work, you know, when you put something out there that's vulnerable, that they're going to embrace it. You know, like it's not as scary anymore because, you know, kind of like, let's say like you and I get to know each other and we're hanging out and I'm thinking like, oh, I'm going to put this out. This is really scary. And I'm like, no, what? Felicia's not going to like rip it apart and like go, you know, like spit on my painting or whatever, you know, like these horrible reactions.
Yeah, no, I won't. I promise. No, I mean, actually recently when looking out into the world through my tiny computer, I guess it was a few years ago or 2.5 years ago, I had contacted an artist that I really liked and I wanted to take his workshop, but I couldn't because I had this residency and I was trying to make it work kind of naively. And he said, I don't really think you need to come take this workshop. I think that you should start gathering a folder full of images that you like. And then after you pile them up, try to figure out why. And so I resisted that for a long time because I've just gone through this period of not wanting to see anyone else's artwork, which I'm just coming out of. Mm-hmm. Though I might go back into. So I've recently been collecting things, and I've been noticing that something that's been delighting me, I guess you could say, or encouraging me, is when I see real creativity in someone's work. Even if I don't really, if their work isn't really my bag, but I've watched them long enough and they're doing enough, I think creativity really comes from constant work, because then you get this idea and you follow it and it changes to something else. That is what I've really been loving to see and respecting lately. So I feel like that was kind of along the line of what you were saying, putting it out there and what you what people appreciate. I've just been kind of meditating on that, each person's own creative discoveries and how that's kind of really maybe one of the most important parts of being a painter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I might have gone off the rails on that question.
Not at all. I'm just thinking, you know, about some of the, just about looking at other people's work and absorbing that. And the other side of it is to stop looking and shut down and digest it and create. You know, like we can be, it's really easy to be consumers in the sense of looking at other people's artwork or, you know, like just constantly reading books, like bringing information in, like consuming in that way, not the commercial aspect of it. But then there comes a point where you have to create and you have to do and you have to act. And I think that requires the solitude and the peacefulness that, you know, artists sort of craves. And, I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking I've interviewed so many artists. And while you were saying that, I was thinking of this, I don't know if you know her work, but one of the artists I interviewed kind of recently was Chelsea James, and some of what you said just really mirrored how she kind of came to her own sort of breakthrough.
Mm-hmm. I really like her work. I found her work ages ago and was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. It's beautiful and it's unique. And, you know, so she, you know, kind of had that breakthrough of, you know, like what you're, very, very similar to what you were talking about when you had that moment of apathy or that letting go. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thinking, you know, like a lot of thoughts are going through my head right now. Like, you know, like I kind of feel like I need the social aspect of, you know, everything of doing these interviews and meeting people and all this stuff that really sort of inspires me. And then like 6 months of just shut everything down, go to a cabin somewhere where there's no
internet.
You should
outsource your interviews for that time period. For sure.
Yeah.
You still probably want to hear them, but...
Just batch them. You know, I mean, it was a huge, you know, I don't want to turn this in, like, I'm not trying to pull the conversation over to my side, but last year I went for 6 weeks in Italy, and I prepared for that by doing, you know, all the interviews in advance and scheduling them out. And so that while I was there, I barely, you know, had contact with anybody, and it was like a drink of fresh water. It was so wonderful, and I didn't understand how badly I needed that until I did it.
Yeah, I think maybe when you asked about rhythm earlier, a more important rhythm is that big rhythm, right? Taking in things and gaining information and then sitting with it and allowing yourself to process it. And for me, like, lately, I've been thinking, I'm interested in that idea. And then I have to go, is that a painting idea? It hasn't been before. Could it be? Can anything be a painting? You know, like,
yeah, just
those kind of trying to figure out what I think kind of questions. But yeah, I think, yeah, maybe just a balance of the two. I'm about to go off to Portrait Society conference in a week or week and a half. So I'll be getting an influx of that personal connection and lots of art in the eyeballs from home. And then I've got 3 months to finish a show. So it'll probably be a good big, big rhythm cycle for that.
Definitely. So before we wrap this up, I want to ask you a couple of quicker questions. Well, the questions are quick, but your answers can be however long you answer them. Do you have a dream project? Like, if there was no restrictions on time or money, what would you create?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm working on it. I think I'm working on figuring out the work I want to do. So I think I'm doing the dream project, living in a place that I like with a studio at home, working on paintings, trying to push myself. I'm pretty happy, content.
Good. That's a great answer. I love that. I love it because it's now. It's not a, you know, future what if thing, which is even better.
Yeah, I hope I'll just get pleasantly surprised if good things happen. If they don't, I'll just be happy.
I love it. If you could own a piece of art by any living artist, what would it be or whose?
I've heard you ask this before, and I really tried to think about it, but no, I don't want any paintings. I mean, I own some paintings. There are beautiful paintings out there. But you know how if you're straight and you look at a girl and you think she's beautiful, but you kind of just want to be her instead of want to have sex with her. Does that make sense? So when I look at paintings, like I could name a painting that I think is just, you know, amazing, but I kind of just want to learn how to get some of that painting in my painting. I enjoy, like I have a couple of friends who make pottery and dishes, and I like having like a beautifully handmade bowl or cup in my hand every day as part of my day, more than I want to have a painting. I actually sometimes just have a freak out thinking, am I making 2D tricks that are flat that go on someone's living room wall? This is a good job. This is not practical. I mean, I went and thought for like, I know this is supposed to be a short answer, but
don't worry.
I went and thought for a while on, is there any way that I can make my paintings more appealing to me? Like, would I buy this painting? I don't know. I'm like, could I make it practical? Should I like add a music CD with it? I came up with a bunch of really stupid ideas that I thought might add more value to a painting. I think I'm kind of a weirdly practical person. So if I was, I mean, it's weird that I'm a painter because I don't know if I wasn't, I would like paintings. I don't know.
That's really, but that, I think that's funny. I had this, I don't know, like a couple of years ago, I had this, you know, there was, you know, really hardcore life stuff happening. And I was asking myself those same questions, you know, in the sense of like, what am I actually contributing to the world, you know, like this is so, it's a luxury item, you know, to have a painting. I'm not really contributing. You know, I had this moment where I was feeling like I'm not contributing to humanity. I'm not, you know, I should be more useful and, you know, I don't know, save the world and poverty, make people's lives better in a real tangible way, you know.
But I'm not the only one who has those thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously I'm not. I'm sure we all think that.
And I've thought about, you know, I think like that moment, it felt like more of a crisis where I was really disturbed by that what I was doing was something that, felt like it was only,
that only after you have a certain amount of wealth can you even entertain the idea of painting or buying a painting. You know what I mean? Like, there's some people that all they're thinking about is the next paycheck or how to get food on the table for their kids or how to get food on the table for themselves or how not to get kicked out of their house.
So it does also seem weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd like to hear from people who buy art, not just to collect it for, investment reasons, which is fine. Buy art, please, people, but no judgment. But someone who has to go through a little bit of hardship to buy a piece and why it is important to them, you know? I would like to hear that. It might be educational for me.
Yeah. I think, did you remember, has this ever crossed your your path? There was a couple in New York who had just this amazing art collection. And
I've seen that.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot their names. Documentary.
Yeah, I think I want to say he was a postman, like he delivered mail. I think that was his job. And she was maybe a teacher. I don't remember. A tiny little apartment. And I remember, when they open the door and they take him through the apartment, you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I should watch that again. Good idea.
Yeah, I'll find it and I'll link to it for the show notes. But I mean, I think that art, both creating it and collecting it, I think it sounds so cliche, but it brings beauty into the world. And I think in some cases that's so desperately needed. I think it's sort of, so from a collector standpoint, and yeah, I would love, maybe I should seek that out. Should. That'd be a great show.
That would be really cool. Are you mean beauty, like physical beauty, like a beautiful painting? I feel like there must be something better, or you would just be collecting photographs.
You're right. I mean,
for me, maybe the beautiful thing is found in teaching more, because I'm able to share a part of the experience of becoming an artist, like a whole lifetime ahead of them if they choose. There seems to be beauty in having learned to be an artist more than what the product is. I feel like the product is secondary. Weirdly, I don't feel enough people pay attention to that. The product is secondary to the experience of learning to and creating.
That's what makes me want to keep painting, is the creation part of it. And I think a lot of artists feel that way. I think that, in some of these interviews, people have hinted at that or outright said it. But it's maybe something that's a little bit too vulnerable for people to talk about, right? Because we want to put art high on this pedestal, like it's this, And in some cases it is. Like, I'm not trying to, again, be judgmental or whatever in how people look at and receive art. But I think that when artists create it, it's one thing. And when somebody else sees it and buys it, it's a totally different animal. The reasons aren't the same.
Yeah, that's a good point. Definitely. Doesn't have to be the same meaning for everyone.
No. And Sean Cheatham mentioned that too, that, he just wants to paint. That he would keep all of his paintings if he didn't have to eat and make a living. I think to your point of why not just a photograph, then there's something very beautiful and special about the human hand. And the other thing I think is that a good painting gives a sense of wonder. It gives a sense of mystery. It gives a sense of hope and belonging, I think, in some way.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you're reminding me of a time when I was in school in New York and went to the Met and thought, this building's full of time machines. Wow, that's so cool. Thanks for that reminder. That was a moment of appreciation and delight for those physical objects. Cool.
Yeah, very cool. So last question, what advice would you give to yourself, the artist that you were 10 years ago, or to somebody who is now thinking about or just taking the leap into this adventure?
Well, get ready to change your expectations and grow them a lot. Feel like you have to set goals and then be willing to adjust and change them. The path is probably longer and much different than you envision it. You can't start without envisioning it, but you got to be flexible. That's what I'd say to myself.
Excellent. Felicia, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. That was fantastic. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, that was fun. You made me think.
Good.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I want to give a big thank you to Felicia for sharing so much of herself. Go to savvypainter.com for show notes. There are links to Felicia's work along with the other artists we mentioned and that documentary about the collectors. I tracked it down for you. While you are there, you can become a part of the community by signing up for my email list. And I want to give a few shout outs. Thank you so much to Lizzie Huer for a lovely review on iTunes. Lizzie is a sixth grader who wants to be an artist when she grows up, and Lizzie listens to the show with her mom in the car. I'm going to take a wild guess and say that her mom just might be Leslie. Keep drawing, Lizzie, and thank you so much. You totally made my day. Also, a thank you to Brandon, Robert Dente, and Kicks for Fun 44, all of whom left great reviews on iTunes. Also, much gratitude to Carla Roth, Cheryl P., Leslie Sadler, Caroline, Maria, Kim Vanderhook, Marie, and so many others for your generous contributions. I'm so grateful to have you as part of the Savvy Painter community. Until next week, this is Antrese Wood with the Savvy Painter podcast. Thank you so much for listening.